Yes, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. Welcome back to Rock My Life podcast. And oh, it feels so good to be back behind this mic again. And talk about timings, with so much going on this weekend, I thought there would be no better time to return than now. So get ready for season 3 of Rock My Life with me, CJ. So how have you been? It's incredible to think what has happened since I last recorded, and looking back through the episodes, I cannot believe that it's been 3 years almost to the day that I sat down at my desk in the midst of COVID lockdown and decided to record the first ever episode on a tiny little mic with no experience of editing and wondering if anyone would listen to this podcast. But you did, and you're back. Or maybe this is your first episode and you're wondering, what is this? To you, I say go back and listen to the amazing people that I got to help tell the story of being gay in sport or ally in sport. And if you are a long-time listener, thank you so much for being part of this journey. It's been incredible, and the comments have been so caring and supportive. And of course, being nominated for the British Podcast Listener's Choice Award was such an honour, even if I didn't win. But then I guess after lockdown, things just went back to normal, didn't they? Work became full-time again, people's social life got filled up, and it just became so difficult to pursue a weekly, if not fortnightly, podcast. So I did have to unplug the mic and say goodbye to producing. However, after a brief break, we are back again with a new, not weekly, but monthly episode of Rock My Life, where I can balance work, my own rugby, and this show to bring you the best stories from around the world. So let's get on with today's show, shall we? Today we're joined by James Anthony, who's co-founded the Birmingham Bulls RUFC over 11 years ago. And back in 2019, the team won the bid to host the 2021 Union Cup. Sadly, like many other events, it was postponed because of COVID. But now that restrictions have been removed, they are 1 week away from hosting the major event where IGR teams from across Europe come together to compete for the Cup at different levels. So let's see what he has to say. So today we're joined by the fabulous James Anthony. Hi, James. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi. Yeah, it's great to be here.
So tell us a bit about yourself, James. What is your team and what is your involvement in the club?
I was one of the founders of the Birmingham Bulls RFC about 11 years ago now, and currently chair the organising committee for the IGR Union Cup, which is, well, the opening ceremony will be going on in a week's time.
Can't wait. It's been such a build-up, and I can't believe it's just only a week away. It feels like it's been a long time coming. And then suddenly, especially at our training, we're like, there's only 7 days left.
Yeah, well, our first ever Union Cup was in the UK, back in Bristol, that the Bulls went to. And I think it's very different when you go abroad, because you've got like all your planning to do, whereas This is a bit different because it's kind of just around the corner for lots of clubs, but obviously quite away for some. But equally, this was supposed to be in 2021. We started thinking about bidding in 2017, started putting our bid together in 2018, and here we are just like forever away. Finally, 4 years later rather than two, in a position to start welcoming people to Birmingham.
And I will come to the Union Cup in just a moment. But for those listeners who may have not come to Birmingham and met yourself, I know you've been with the Bulls for a long time now, but I just want to get a little bit of idea about how important the team is to you, how it's changed since you've been in the team, and why IGR is still such an important aspect of rugby to you.
So the Bulls came along at a really good time for me. So people would laugh now, but I had gone on a bit of a fitness journey. I'd lost a lot of weight. I'd started doing exercise, but got to that point where I felt that I was putting a bit back on, and, you know, I've never enjoyed the gym and never will. So I needed something to motivate me to keep going. At the same sort of time, I'd had a lot of friends in the gay community when I was at university, but a lot of them afterwards had moved away and kind of got to the point where I had gay friends all over the country, but not in Birmingham. So it answered both of those questions, really. And my plan when I first went along to the first ever training session was to run around a bit, do a bit of exercise, make up the numbers until they had enough people, and then I would probably be rubbish, so I wouldn't play after that. Some people would say I'm not the best player, but lasted still, other than this tournament, playing as regular hooker for the Bulls. And it's funny because I come from a rugby family. I mean, not this code. My family think, you know, when they talk about gay rugby, they think that's what rugby union is in general, because I come from a rugby league background in Hull. But, you know, most of the men in my family played rugby. I played rugby as a kid for a very short period, just to kind of like, it's what you did. And I've mostly sat in the cold on the subs bench trying to wrap myself in everybody else's coats. So I never expected to be any good at rugby, but found a liking for it. And the benefit of rugby union is that you've got all shapes and sizes have a bit more of a role. Though I think that might be going if they're not careful. So it meant that a big lad like me that, you know, had a bit of power in my legs could find a role for myself in the scrum and in the rucks and the mauls. So came to be the old reliable one on the team, essentially.
And I think that's something that's really come across when I've interviewed other people in previous shows, that they've really found their place in the IGR team. I know you mentioned it, you were trying to find somewhere in Birmingham that you could do something that was quite active for you and increase your social circles, especially within that the LGBT community. Was there any point where you were thinking about doing rugby not part of an IGR, or was there any barriers that you felt about approaching one of those teams, or was it just barely that you knew someone in part of the Bulls and you thought that would be something for you?
Yeah, I remember having this idea that I was going to play rugby once I went to university, and I went along to one training session of the University Rugby League team, and we spent a lot of time running backwards and forwards in sets of six, and I nearly died, so I didn't go back to training. I think for me, I always wanted to be wanted to be around rugby. I followed it. My team back up in Hull is currently pretty dreadful, but we've had a few highs as well. And so it's always been a big part of my identity. I think gay people often do have a bit of a thing about sport. I am one of those gay lads that sport, you know, PE was not the lesson I wanted to do. And I don't even think you can necessarily put your finger on why. It's just this feeling that sport isn't for you, it's for other people. And I think that's one of the reasons why IGR clubs that are based in the LGBT community are better at regular clubs at bringing in players later in life. So we've got one of our players who isn't, he's an ally, as it were. But he plays for us because he went to a local rugby team. He's a PT, he's very fit. Later on, but, you know, a bit more mature, not exactly old, but was essentially told, you've started too late, so don't even bother. But he happened to be a PT for one of our players, so ended up coming down and playing for us. But we have to be good at bringing in new people that have never played rugby. And people come along to us and say, oh, well, I've only played rugby at school. And we're like, well, do you know what? You're one of the most experienced people because you actually played rugby at school. Because, you know, Birmingham's not a big rugby city. It doesn't necessarily, unless you're in one of the posher independent or private schools, you don't particularly play rugby around here. So most people have, you know, people don't know that the ball's round and that you have to pass backwards when they come to training for the first time. But they soon learn, and we are much better than your average clubs at bringing people into the sport later on in life.
And there's a lot of times people have again mentioned that, and it's great that IGR is so inclusive, not just about sexuality, but also about your identity in terms of your physique as well. And it's interesting that you mentioned about those other teams and saying that you're basically too late, because we always find, especially in Manchester, that because we don't have a junior team, we are trying to get people who are, you know, a bit older that may have had a bit of experience, but equally with zero experience. And That's why, personally, I think that IGR is really still valid and still important to the LGBT community. I know that I've spoken to other people that might not identify with the LGBT community who say that, well, their clubs are very inclusive. Do you still think that that's the case? Or do you still think that there is definitely a need for this IGR?
So I think that there is a need for gay and LGBT plus spaces forever. I don't think they're just about sheltering from discrimination, though that is part of the role. And we've got, you know, we've got a player who played against us and their team was quite homophobic about it, so now plays for us. So some of that stuff does still happen. But even, you know, in a world where we've completely excluded homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, then I think there is still a role. And the term inclusive rugby is not what I'm a fan of, because it makes it sound like the rest of rugby isn't inclusive. And I have played. So, when the Bulls first started, we didn't play games regularly. I went along to play for a local team that actually had a few gay players that played for it. And you quite regularly see the non-gay ones out on the gay scene on a night, which is often confusing. But I don't think that's the reason we exist. The way I talk about IGR clubs is being a rugby club based in the LGBT plus community. And in the same way, you know, in South Wales, clubs are based in mining communities, clubs are based around factories, clubs are based around villages. You don't have to work for that factory. You don't have to live in that village to play for that club. It's just where it's based. And I think our club is based in the Birmingham's LGBT plus community. So you don't have to be part of it to play, but that's our home. That's, you know, where our support and our most of our players come from. That's like where our fan base comes from. And I think that'll always be the case.
And have you seen an increase in, like you're saying, ally players? Has there been more people coming over the past couple of years?
I think it swings around about. I think we've probably not got as many as we have, but I think that two of our players both went to visit Thailand in the pandemic and never came home. Because they're enjoying Thailand, not because they got stuck there. I think they quite enjoyed the bit that they were stuck there for a while. So I don't think we've got as many as we did at the minute, but it's sort of cyclical, and a lot of it is about people's friends and people that they work with come along and play because they just hear about a club that's really open and welcoming of new people, whether you played rugby before or not.
It's very hard not that you should be able to tell, but when we do go onto the pitch, there's absolutely no way of knowing whether they are identified as straight or gay or bisexual, whatever. They just come to play rugby. And I think that's a real strength of IGR, that there's no issue about who you are as long as you've come to play rugby and you respect that. I think that's something that's transgressed across a lot of IGR teams. Would you agree with that with the Bulls?
I agree. I mean, there was a few embarrassing years in our early days where the only good players on the team were straight, which is not not the message that you want to give. But our gay players have caught up now, so it's a lot more even. But it's true. And there are players that I've thought were allies rather than being LGBT that turned out that they were and didn't particularly shout about it, which, you know, is fine as well. It shows that we all make these assumptions about people, and that's definitely not always right.
So I'm sure many of our European listeners are aware that next weekend is a huge deal for the Birmingham Bulls. I know we've mentioned it previously that it is the Union Cup. For those people listening who have not heard of the Union Cup, it's exactly like the Bingham Cup, but just for the European teams. And if you don't know what that is either, then I don't know where you've been for the last two seasons, because it's all we seem to talk about on this podcast. Every time I interview someone, they cannot wait for the next European Cup, Bingham Cup, whatever tournament that happens to be near them. So, James, tell us why Birmingham and why now?
Well, I think it's a really good time for Birmingham. So it's 2 years later than we wanted to, but Birmingham's had a real flourish in terms of sport. So we hosted the Commonwealth Games last summer, and we got beautiful weather, which we're hoping to repeat in a week's time. But people saw Birmingham in a different light. All the visitors that came saw a really vibrant city, multicultural, but well integrated, people just being happy, you know, to be here. And I think people associate Birmingham with a sort of industrial drudge, but actually loads going on. Beautiful buildings, good, you know, beautiful scenery as soon as you could step out of the city, and, you know, a really, really welcoming gay scene. And one of the things I particularly like about Birmingham is essentially all of our bars and clubs within stumbling distance of each other. So you don't have to choose which area of the town you go out in. If you want to go to gay bars, you just go to them and go from one to another, because actually most of them don't charge cover at the entrance either. So you really can just sample a bit of everything in Birmingham and enjoy different bits of the scene for different people when you're all in a group on the same night.
And do you feel that the gay scene in Birmingham is still as strong as it was?
I think COVID's been difficult for bars, so they'll all be open when there's an extra 1,000-odd rugby players there. But, you know, whereas once upon a time you could rely, essentially, if you turned up in a city in the middle of the week with work or something, you could always rely that the gay bars would be open, and that's not the case anymore midweek. You know, they're clearly struggling with costs, and, you know, people aren't going out as much as they did. But on a weekend, I think it's still as vibrant, still as much going on, still as many people wanting to make the most of things.
And I've always enjoyed coming to Birmingham. It's been a great atmosphere every time we've come, whether it been a tournament. And many years ago, I think it's been such a long time since the Spartans and the Bulls have actually competed together outside of a tournament. But when we've been to Touch My Brum, it's been an incredible atmosphere. You've always been so welcoming. So we cannot wait to come down to Birmingham. So what I want to talk about now is, you've mentioned that it was meant to be in 2021. Unfortunately, because of the pandemic, you had to postpone it, which I know there was a real frustration for us because we were really excited. Was it difficult to put things on hold? Was it easy to kind of just postpone it? What was it like?
It was a really difficult decision to make because we sort of went through this period where restrictions started to lift and it looked like it could be possible. And then another wave hit and it looked like it wasn't possible. And I think in many ways, the fact that the Bingham Cup was cancelled and sort of leapfrogged also was cancelled by 2 years meant that when we cancelled, we had to do it by 2 years, meant it felt a long time away. And we kind of had to pick ourselves back up again when, you know, to start planning things. And we probably forgot half the things that we'd already agreed and had to go over a lot of old ground. But it did mean that, thankfully, we're so far away from any restrictions. And yeah, I think unlike last year when people for Bingham went, you know, at the point where you were starting to buy plane tickets and stuff, people weren't 100% sure that the tournament would happen. I think that hasn't been a problem for us because, you know, no countries have restrictions and doesn't seem to be coming back soon. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely been difficult, particularly as we've ended up organising it as inflation's gone through the roof. So our costs have rocketed, and equally, you know, people's ability to pay for stuff has been difficult. So we know that's been really hard for some people to come to the tournament. So, you know, that was quite a stressful thing to do. And I think people out there thinking, oh, they've put their prices up because they're making all this money. I have to say, we have had some incredibly stressful times talking about how we can afford to put the tournament on, and we can, and we're there, but it's certainly not rolling in money, I can say that.
It has been very difficult for many people in terms of the financial costs, and it's a shame that there will be some people that perhaps might not be able to afford to be there. Obviously, our team, we've tried really hard. We've done lots of fundraising and charity events to try and make sure. And it is one of those things that has come up where we have been doing fundraising that people say, but it's only Birmingham, it's only down the road. But a lot of people don't understand the hidden costs. You got your transport, the accommodation, the registration, the kits. It soon adds up to huge amounts, even when you're in the same country. So I can only imagine what it's like for international teams trying to get here as well. But what is it about Union Cup this year that you are most looking forward to?
Well, this is the first time it's going to be over 3 days. Which will, to be honest, make the players less exhausted. I mean, we've been in tournaments where we've been playing at 8 o'clock in the morning and then had our last game at 5 o'clock in the evening and just and then had to get up for an 8 o'clock in the morning game again. So that's something that's definitely going to be an improvement. And it means that people get 3 days, of not just playing, but enjoying watching everyone play. We've got a record number of teams. So we've got 47 teams this year.
Wow.
Which includes 3 women's teams. So who'll be playing against each other in a tens tournament. And then looking like we'll have a team mixed, two teams mixed between the three, playing a full 15s game just before the final. And actually, I think really, really special for the women's game on the Friday of the session, we've got a training clinic for them, which has been run by 2 coaches that helped England win the Women's World Cup. So
fantastic.
There's a pretty good range of activities for the women's tournament, which will be really good.
That sounds amazing. And so many opportunities for everybody. And I know you briefly touched on it before, and it is a big issue in the media at the moment surrounding transgender women athletes, and they're being banned at the moment from the contact rugby. And it's been all over the news, and I'm sure everybody has all their opinions and views on it. But I understand that the Bulls have been working hard in a response to this. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yes, it was really difficult timing for the tournament, but about to be bringing LGBT plus people from all across Europe to play rugby, and in the midst of planning for it, the RFU decides that trans women can't play rugby here. Like a real body blow to the trans community, and made it very difficult for us. And I know that there were quite a lot of people angry with the tournament for even going ahead and sort of complying with the rules, but absolutely no way we could have done anything but despite looking at every sort of possible angle. So we decided quite early on that if trans women weren't going to be able to play, if trans men were going to have extra restrictions put on them, that we would be the sort of allies that we would want to be. So we would use the tournament to make really clear that we want trans women here and that trans women should be playing rugby. So we've kind of branded nearly everything with the trans flag. So when players register, their wristband will be the trans flag. Our referees' shirts are all with the trans flag on them. And one of the things that people said to us they were frustrated by previously is that when World Rugby started saying that trans women shouldn't play rugby, there was then the Bingham Cup and World Rugby and the IFU were using all these pictures from them saying that we're into equality. Well, actually, every picture of play will essentially have a referee in the background with a great big trans flag on them. So being really, really clear. We've also worked with trans people to look at how we can use the tournament to amplify their voices, but also to make sure our clubs are as inclusive as possible. So there's going to be some drop-in training during registration for people on how to build a more inclusive rugby club, how to use pronouns, things like that, which is being delivered by trans players themselves. We've just tried to lend our voice to that, use our platform, and make sure any press, any coverage of the tournament is really clear that we want to be a fully inclusive tournament of all LGBT plus people, and that includes our trans siblings as well.
And what has the uptake been on that? Has it been positive from everybody? Has there been areas where you've had to really work hard to get the message across?
Well, particularly early on when the decision was made, obviously we had to take it in and look at what we were doing, and there was quite a lot of criticism from some clubs, and I know some of the European clubs that were going through the same thing internally as we were in the home nations had a lot of criticism, which is understandable, and there was a lot of anger amongst people. Thankfully, touching lots of wood, we've not had a huge backlash for our pro position. I mean, I know I've had, I have to say, terrible stuff on Twitter and stuff like that when about my own speaking out for trans rights in the past. They always seem to be quite obsessed with the fact that I've got a beard. Apparently, being a man with a beard makes you absolutely the worst person to talk about trans rights if you listen to people on social media. But thankfully, we've not had much of that so far. And certainly, within the rugby community, we've just had support from people, and people have lots of questions, and I know there's lots of soul searching about what is the right thing on this, and our view is we should help support people through that soul searching and look to make an informed discussion as possible, but as long as people know that our position is quite clear.
And that's brilliant. And it's such a important message to make sure that everybody does feel valued and listened to. And I think just having those conversations with everybody, regardless of what background or identity, you know, everybody's opinion can be valid as long as it's not going to be at the detriment to somebody else in the conversation. And the more that we are talking, the better. As soon as we start closing doors and putting up barriers, that's when we are going to have differences and people are going to get upset and hurt. And it's a shame that rugby, that has been such a inclusive opening sport to everybody for so long, like you were saying about the size in terms of your background, whether you've picked up a rugby ball in the past or not, and now we seem to be kind of taking a step back and going back in time to how things used to be. So it's great to hear that you're really trying to put a step forward and showing people that they are welcome regardless of identities, backgrounds, etc.
Well, I think there's a, to me, when people talk about mismatch in terms of people that might have a different gender history, actually, you know, particularly in participation of rugby, you get a lot of mismatches. I have to say, I've played against teams that are probably well above what we should be playing against and tackled people that are faster than me, stronger than me. But that's because there was a mismatch in the teams we were playing, and that can easily be sorted. And, you know, particularly in participation level rugby, I think we have to look at participation sports differently. I think there's a different discussion to have about elite level sports, though, you know, still very supportive of trans women being involved in that. But I think it is a different discussion. We know the benefits of sport. And if we, you know, rugby talks about the benefit of rugby, the benefit to mental health, the benefit to physical health, all this business, we can't talk about those benefits and then say, but not for you.
No, I totally agree. So on a lighter topic, do you have a fondest memory from unions or Bingham Cups in the past?
So personally for me, my favourite Union Cup was in Belgium. So that was our second as a club, and our first one in Bristol. We could only, they had a tens tournament on the side, and that was all we could get a team into. And we got beaten in every single game and battered in some of them. So after that, I became our club captain and said I'd do it for 2 years. In 2 years' time, we would be at the Union Cup, being a competitive rugby club. That was the objective. So it wasn't to win it, just to be competitive. And we did really well. Didn't quite make it into the middle tier final, but we're in the middle tier. And that was, you know, very emotional. We have a bit of a story that in the run-up to that competition, we headed down to London expecting to play the Steelers twos. And when we got there, we were playing their thirds. And they told us that's because their twos needed a competitive game. So when we were drawn in the same group as Steelers twos and beat them, that was a very happy moment. That was also when we had our best ever fancy dress in Brussels as well. So I have to say that the Spartans were possibly slightly better for us in your wedding dresses. but that's when we dressed up as the dancer from the Sia video. So, you know, a lot of flesh-coloured leotards and
blonde. I remember that.
We got in the, you know, Flemish newspaper, and we got all sorts of things with pictures of us dancing around. It was like a bit of a trending thing on social media, a video of us all dancing around dressed up in our Sia outfits with a local busker in the middle of Brussels. So
that, like a flash mob.
Indeed. So on the field and off, that was a real highlight for me. I mean, we've continued to improve since, but that was personally a real big change, and I think has helped set us on to be the rugby club that we are today, one that does take its rugby seriously and works hard at these tournaments, but equally make sure they have a very good time as well.
Absolutely. And I'm sure many listeners who are part of IGR teams can definitely relate to that. I know I can. Have you got a fancy dress theme this year?
Well, currently I'm deciding whether I really can get into the fancy dress because I've just got so much else on my brain at the minute.
That's true.
But there is, it might be a night of a thousand somethings, but I feel like the Bulls will want to keep that under wraps until they hit the streets of Birmingham.
I was going to see whether you would then reveal and then ask me, and I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. I'm allowed to key. So I'm glad that you kept that a secret as ours. But all I will say, it is very relevant to the time of year for us. With the Union Cup being on in Birmingham at the moment, have you seen an increase in people joining the Bulls?
We're hoping we'll see that afterwards, I think, because as much as we've tried in the run-up to the tournament, it's not had a huge amount of attention. And in the last few weeks, I feel like I've spoken to so many different people and we've got different players out speaking to people in the press. And I'm hoping that the coverage, particularly in the local news, but wider of the tournament will be really, really good. But we've actually picked up a lot of new players this year in general. And one of the difficult things, and I think this is something that lots of IGR clubs have had, is we've got lots of new players that don't know what these tournaments are. It's a long time since we've been to everyone. We didn't really send anyone to Bingham this year. We just couldn't get the interest because that uncertainty and the cost and things like that. So we know a lot of other clubs have been the same thing. And we worked with the IGR to do a bit of telling people stories about these tournaments because there are some whole clubs that have set up since there's been a major tournament like this on, making sure people know what to expect, that it's not just a normal tour that rugby clubs go on, that actually this is the pinnacle. And I always like talking when people are like, oh, it's the end of the season. I'm like, well, it's the end of the domestic season. We're now into the international season.
Absolutely. And I think, like you mentioned, with there being so many teams, when I saw the list of all the teams in the different divisions, it was incredible to see from a sort of a selfish British point of view that there has been a dramatic increase in IGR teams that, being aware of, I knew that they'd been set up, but to be able to come and compete at a Union Cup is incredible. And I think a lot of that is down to the fact that it's become a lot more accepted that there are IGR teams. And also it's probably down to the fact that it's in Birmingham. And so it is easier for those UK teams who are new, that the travel aspect might not be as expensive as perhaps going international. But I can't wait to see all these teams that I've kind of seen on social media, but not actually had the opportunity to play against yet. So this will be a really good opportunity for that.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing the spread of locations that teams are now. I mean, when the Bulls set up 11 years ago, we were a big city, but it took us a while. But there were teams then in London, Cardiff, Manchester, Newcastle, Edinburgh, but in sort of big cities with decent sized gay scenes and stuff like that. Whereas we're now seeing really successful clubs pop up in decent, you know, medium sized cities like Hull, where I come from, but, you know, places like Colchester and all sorts of places setting clubs. And I think in some ways for those clubs, there's not that much there in the community already, so it's really meeting a need, and people are sort of crying out for those LGBT plus spaces that are not Bars and Grindr, which is essentially all you get.
Yeah, just to have it, like you said, like 1,000 people in one city is going to be incredible, and being able to share their stories, and I really hope that the Birmingham Bulls allow those people to build those memories and come back again and again to the future Union Cups and Bingham Cups, hopefully, with it the next one being in Rome, which isn't too far away. So I'm hoping that teams will be able to join that one.
Well, and of course, teams come back to Birmingham every year because they can all come to Touch My Brum.
There you go.
One of my proudest moments is that I did come up with the name Touch My Brum. So that will forever be,
wow,
my legacy.
A celebrity in the room.
Well, people at first said, no, it's too silly. And it was called something very dull, like the Mercian Cup or something boring. And so I was like, well, keep calling it, telling everyone it's called Touch My Bum. And if you do it enough, people, it soon caught on and never looked back. It's the best name for a touch tournament you could have, I think.
And is that returning this year as well?
It is. So that's back in July. We had thought originally people won't want to come to Birmingham twice. So we were sort of last year we were saying to people, oh no, well, we'll have a year off from it next year because you'll have all have been to Birmingham. And people were like, no, Touch My Bum is like a point of the year that we want to come to. And of course, there's lots of touch teams that have developed that are out there as well. And I think for one of the things Touch My Bum is perfect for is contact players that want to run around in the summer, because we don't take our touch that seriously in Birmingham, but want to run around in the summer, you know, it's normally a sunny day, and then just have a really good party. So hopefully people will know exactly what the party's like in Birmingham, and we'll see lots of people come back to Touch My Bum in July as well.
Yeah, I cannot wait. We've got a very competitive touch group who have gone from strength to strength to strength, and it's been incredible to see so many people come from all sorts of backgrounds, and they always go on about Touch My Bum, and I always go along and join them either by playing or just by spectating, because by that time of the year it is kind of like a fitness program for the union players, the contact players, to come into touch. It keeps them going over the summer. It builds up their agility, and you can learn so many skills just from touch that you wouldn't necessarily always pick up on in the union side. So hopefully I'll be able to come to that as well, as along with all the other Spartan touch teams that are really looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Yeah, definitely a good way to keep running around, though. I tend to referee because I am not built for playing touch. So I tend to referee, but that seems to be more running around than anybody else in a touch game.
But on the weekend, when the Union Cup does come to Birmingham, where will people find you? Will they find you watching the games, or will you be very busy in the background doing all the admin?
So I think I'm going to spend some time in the background in our event control and making sure everyone's having a lovely, safe time. I'm definitely going to be spending some time walking around with a earpiece in and a clipboard and just generally looking like an important person, because that's what we do it for, essentially. But yeah, hopefully get to watch plenty of the games. And actually our event control area has got a big window over the number one pitch, so wherever I am, I will get to watch plenty of rugby. There's also a bar with a balcony over the number one pitch as well, so
fantastic.
Good facilities.
Well, listen, thank you so much for being part of the show today. I will let you get back to your very busy countdown to the Union Cup next week. Thank you so much for sharing all of your past, present and future aspects of the rugby team.
No worries. Great to be here.
Well, that's all we've got time for on today's show. A huge thank you to James for taking the time to speak to us. And I wish the Bulls every success for the weekend. I'm sure it will be fantastic. And if you happen to be there, make sure you say hi to James. And of course, come and say hi to us, part of the Rock My Life team. Enjoy the weekend. And don't forget, if you have a story to share or want to promote your team's successes, make sure to DM us at Rock My Life Podcast on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. I'm CJ, and this is Rock My Life.